Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-ZTRIM. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in to the program tonight. We do appreciate it. This is the eve of George W. Bush's escalation speech. Tomorrow he will announce at 9 o'clock tomorrow evening, just as we're going on the air, so we will be carrying it as much of it live as we can. Bush will be announcing an escalation of the fighting in Iraq, a commitment of more U.S. troops, more slaughter, more murder, more death, more destruction, unless he stopped. Pretty astonishing. And welcome to Hour 8 of the 100-hour congressional countdown. It looks like the new Democratic-led Congress is off to a good start, reanimating the 9/11 Commission report. Remember that? Remember the 9/11 Commission report? Huh? That was the one that Bush and Cheney testified in front of, only under the conditions that A, Cheney got to accompany Bush, and B, none of their testimony would be under oath. Remember that? Also remember the 9/11 Commission had all sorts of ideas on how to protect this country against future terrorist attacks, none of which has been implemented by the Congress, by the Republican Congress. Nothing. So the Democrats are trying to get into law some of the recommendations on that 9/11 Commission report, and trying to figure out why the Republicans pushed its recommendations under the rug, why they didn't care about the safety of the American people. Well, we know why. As soon as the Republicans would figure out a way to privatize all that, they would have done it. But they just couldn't quite figure it out. So they deep-sixed it. And this country is more vulnerable today to a terrorist attack because of our policies in the Middle East, the entire Middle East, than we were before the 9/11 attack by the Saudi nationals who came after us. And from the leaks of Bush's speech tomorrow, or the guesses by the experts, the themes seem to be liberty, victory, safety, and escalation. So other than the escalation part, what's new? Now we're going to hear from Tony the Silent Snowman tonight, as he compares Bush's leadership in the terror wars to, sit down, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Winston Churchill. Can you believe that? This reminds me when Reagan compared the counterinsurgency in Nicaragua, the Contras, an organization completely created by the CIA, thugs, bastards, liars, and killers, And Reagan compared them to the to being the moral equivalent of our founding fathers. Jesus, these Republicans make me sick. Anyway, Tony Snow claims that the speech that Bush is giving tomorrow is still being tweaked by somebody. Bush can no more write than he can stand up and pee. But we're supposed to believe that George W. Bush is working very diligently on the speech. He's still busy with consultations just 24 hours before he is to deliver another one of his fireside chats. No, his London is under attack. No, his we will not rest. Never mind. Bush is still taking the pulse, as he likes to say. Well, the corpse is getting colder. And the bloodshed in Baghdad just yesterday, marathon airstrikes, street fighting. Did you see it on the news tonight? Scary stuff, along with the attack in Somalia. Who decides now who we are going to bomb? Are we allowed to just bomb anybody? Is there nothing? I know. They're going after Al-Qaeda in the Horn of Africa. They're everywhere. What about the Al-Qaeda in downtown Beijing? Are we going to bomb them? No, I don't think so. Street fighting, airstrikes, car bombs, attacks on another foreign country. It just doesn't stop, does it? Jesus, God, we are in a madhouse, aren't we? And Bush is talking about freedom and victory and racing around collecting opinions 4 years after he decided to invade a country that had done nothing to us. Nothing. Can you get more delusional than that? So, how do you dull the press on all this carnage and the carnage to come? Well, you unleash a raining hell of train crashes and dead birds falling out of the sky and foul odors and nuclear submarine collisions and school shootings. There's some nifty distractions for American media to get their teeth around, right? It's madness, isn't it? It's madness. Do you feel like things are spinning out of control? Do you? Man. Kennedy gave a speech at the press club, a lengthy speech. It's available. I printed it off, haven't read the whole thing yet, but it is it's available at, where is it available? Well, I found it somewhere. I've got it here in front of me, the entire thing. Here's a quote from his speech today. Andre sent it to me. It was you can find it on Raw Story. That's where I linked to it, on rawstory.com. Rawstory.com. They have a link to the entire speech. Kennedy said, quote, "For the sake of our men and women in uniform in Iraq, the president should have heeded these generals, not discarded them and gone shopping for advice that matches his own wishful, flawed thinking. Cooking the intelligence is how we got into this war. Ignoring the sound counsel of our military is no way to end it." Shopping for advice. Yeah. And Andre also suggested that what the Democrats should do is a simple photo op with generals. This is a good idea. Just surround themselves with all these generals who are now retired, of course. They can't speak out against this bastard, not deliberately and openly, without being charged with mutiny. But all the retired generals, including Casey and Abizaid. Abizaid, of course, speaks Arabic. He's of Lebanese descent. Have these generals get together with the Democratic Party leadership in a photo op, the generals who are demanding a redeployment. And in this photo op, discuss with them, have the Democratic Party leadership engage them in conversation about how to redeploy. As Andre writes, the visual connection will be there on television that the Army supports the Congress, not the President. Something's got to be done. These neocon bastards and this Bush thug are, I get the feeling that they really are setting us up for endless war. Just endless, endless slaughter. And as Paul Craig Roberts wrote recently, just the other day, or maybe it was today, that we all had the sense that the new year began on sort of a hopeful note, that this illegal war would soon be ended. As Roberts writes, now remember who Paul Craig Roberts is. He was Assistant Secretary of Treasury in the Reagan administration, former editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal's editorial page. He says the repudiation of Bush and the Republicans in the November congressional elections, the Iraq Study Group's unanimous conclusion that the U.S. needs to remove its troops from the strife, the sectarian strife that Bush set in motion by invading Iraq, Donald Rumsfeld's removal as defense secretary and his replacement by Iraq Study Group member Robert Gates, the thumbs down given by America's top military commanders to the neoconservatives' plan to send more U.S. troops to Iraq, new polls of the U.S. military that reveal that only a minority supports Bush's Iraq policy, thus giving new meaning to the term support the troops. These were all indicators that Americans are starting to wake up, starting to realize what giving this thug carte blanche really has meant and continues to mean to this country.
How can we go forward when we don't know which way to turn?
And humans can coexist peacefully. It's More of Mike Malloy.
As Paul Craig Roberts points out, Peter Spiegel, the Pentagon's correspondent for the LA Times, reported about a week ago that the neocons, who are now running our government and have been since Bush was appointed president, they have used the failure of Bush's policy in Iraq to convince Bush to launch an aggressive counterinsurgency requiring the buildup of troop levels, which is what Bush is involved in now. This is what he is ordering and what the speech tomorrow night is going to be about. Another Middle East expert suggests that the Shiite militias, such as the one led by Muqtada al-Sadr, are the intended targets of Bush's surge option. Now, Bush is too stupid to realize this. Remember, this man didn't know there was a difference between Shia and Sunni and still doesn't know what the distinction is, I would imagine. But the neocons, you see, there is nothing that warms their hearts more than Muslim killing Muslim. And as Roberts writes, there seems no surer way to escalate the conflict in Iraq than to attack the Shia militias. For longer than the U.S. fought Germany in World War II, 150,000 U.S. troops in Iraq have been thwarted by a small insurgency drawn from Iraq's minority population of Sunnis. It hardly seems feasible that 30,000 additional U.S. troops, demoralized by extended deployment, can succeed in a so-called surge against the Shia militias when 150,000 U.S. troops can't succeed against the minority Sunnis. Do you understand what Bush is doing? He is sending American troops into a meat grinder so that the Democrats who have taken, this is all political, so that the Democrats who have taken over Congress cannot resist his war effort, because then they'll be accused of abandoning the troops. The Likud party in Israel will then have its options put out on the table, which include a nuclear strike against Iran. Oh, my God. As Paul Craig Roberts goes on, the reason the U.S. has not been driven out of Iraq is that the majority Shia have not been part of the insurgency. The Shia are attacking the Sunnis, who are forced to fight a two-front war against U.S. troops and Shiite militias and death squads. The U.S. owes its presence in Iraq, just as the colonial powers always owed their presence in the Middle East, to the disunity of Arabs. Western domination of the Muslim world succeeded by not picking a fight with all of the disunited Arabs at the same time. Guess what Bush has got planning? Got in the planning stages. As Roberts writes, attacking the Shiite militias while fighting a Sunni insurgency will violate this rule. If Bush ignores U.S. military commanders and expert opinion and accepts the so-called surge option advanced by the delusional neocon allies of Israel's right-wing Likud party, U.S. troops will be engulfed in general insurgency. That's why General John Abizaid resigned on January 5th. He wants no part of the Republican Party's sacrifice of U.S. soldiers to this sectarian conflict. Now remember, in the Senate Armed Service Committee hearings a couple of months ago, John McCain, who believes in the efficacy of violence and not in diplomacy. If you remember that scene, and that's what it was, McCain pressing General Abizaid to request more U.S. troops to be sent to Iraq, and Abizaid kept saying no, and finally he said the following, quote, "Senator McCain, I met with every divisional commander, General Casey, the Corps commander, General Dempsey, we all talked together, and as I said, in your professional opinion, and I said, in your professional opinion, to these generals, if we were to bring in more American troops now, does it add considerably to our ability to achieve success in Iraq? And they all said no." End quote. You see, Bush is like Hitler. He really is. He blames defeat on his military commanders, not on his own insane policy. Like Hitler, Roberts writes, he protects himself from reality with delusion. In his last hours, Hitler was ordering non-existent German armies to drive the Russians from Berlin. More on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Soldiers of peace are just changing the game. Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives, fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soul
it would be a disaster for governments that have got energy resources to be in the hands of these extremists. They would use energy to extract blackmail from the United States. And when you...
Five before the hour, back to what Paul Craig Roberts has written is out there today. I believe it's at antiwar.com. He finishes up by saying, the point of all this, he compares Bush in a very direct way to Hitler, where it concerns fighting a losing war. Bush and Hitler both blamed defeat on their military commanders, and that's exactly what Bush has done. Remember what this rat bastard said. He listens to the commanders on the ground. No, he doesn't. He listens to them momentarily, and if they don't say what he wants to hear, then he lets them go and brings in a couple who will say what he wants to hear. Now, Paul Craig Roberts, and a lot of people who are much smarter than I am, where and you are probably, where it concerns international relations and the cesspool that is the Middle East, these people have been writing furiously in the past several days. People in Israel, people in America, people around the world, people in the UK, Jew and Gentile alike, have been writing that the driving force behind all this is this right-wing Likud party in Israel. The driving force behind Bush's madness. There also is Bush's madness, which is singular in its obscenity because of who he is. Coupled with the neocons, the Israeli lobby in this country, and the extreme right-wingers in Israel, most of whom the Israeli people don't like anymore either. You have an absolute recipe for disaster, a disaster on an unprecedented scale. Paul Craig Roberts writes, by manipulating Bush and provoking a military crisis in which the U.S. stands to lose its army in Iraq, the neoconservative hope to revive the implementation of their plan for U.S. conquest of the Middle East. They believe they can use fear, so-called honor, and the aversion of macho Americans to ignoble defeat to expand the conflict in response to military disaster. That's what we have now. The neocons believe that the loss of an American army would be met with the electorate's demand for revenge, and the barriers to the draft would fall, as would the barriers to the use of nuclear weapons. Neocon godfather Norman Podoretz, I hope I'm saying his name right. I never could pronounce Norman's last name. Neocon godfather Norman Podoretz set out the plan for Middle East conquest several years ago in Commentary magazine. It is a plan for Muslim genocide. In place of physical extermination of Muslims, Podoretz advocates their cultural destruction by deracination. Islam is to be torn out by the roots and reduced to a purely formal shell devoid of any real beliefs. Podoretz disguises the neoconservative attack against diversity with contrived arguments, but its real purpose is to use the U.S. military to subdue Arabs and to create space for Israel to expand. Not enough Americans, Paul Craig Roberts writes, are aware that this is what the war on terror is all about. Now, you take it for whatever it's worth, in your opinion. We in this country, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, man, woman, black, white, whatever, we have been told for 60 years that the absolute necessity of supporting Israel is the absolute underpinning of this country, no matter what Israel did. In instance after instance, the United States and Israel and maybe the Mariana Islands or Samoa would vote no on resolutions that would condemn Israel's actions against the Palestinians. The rest of the world would vote yes. Resolution after resolution passed by the UN have been ignored by Israel, because it didn't suit what they considered to be their political needs at the time. And I know what we've all been taught. We've all been taught Israelis good, Arabs bad. And there is the only element of truth in that, as far as I can determine from my own personal studies, is that during the Cold War, Israel was an ally of the United States and gave us a toehold right in the middle of the Arab world that was, for the most part, backed by and dependent upon the Soviet Union, or so we were told. So we were told. And the prize? All that oil in the Middle East. Now, it's a little bit staggering when you realize that the Soviet republics, including Russia itself, Siberia, contains more oil than Saudi Arabia and Iraq put together. So, I don't know. I just, it's driving me crazy. It's driven me crazy for the past 30 years. I support the existence of the State of Israel. I don't support the policies of Likud, and I don't support what's going on with the Palestinians by the Israeli government. Jimmy Carter writes the book, The Man Who Has Done More to Try to Promote Peace in That Part of the World. And because he uses the word apartheid in his title, and because he cites instance after instance after instance of the various Israeli governments treating the Palestinians as if they're subhuman, he is immediately labeled an anti-Semite. Jimmy Carter, oh, for Christ's sake! And it doesn't stop. It just doesn't stop. God damn you. Two words there. God damn you. In this country, if you dare criticize the policies of Israel, damn you if you dare to challenge the rightness of what they're doing. And damn you if you dare to bring up the idea that the driving force behind this moron, George Bush's activities in the Middle East, are these neocons who are nothing, Americans, who are nothing more than an American extension of the right-wing Likud party in Tel Aviv. We're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to do that in this country. You can talk about anything, but don't you dare bring up the influence of the Israelis on American foreign policy. Don't you dare bring it up. Because if you do, you're a Jew hater and you love the Holocaust. If you even believe the Holocaust existed. That's how they nail you. I'm reading a book right now by Norman Finkelstein. No, he's not Irish. About that very topic. It just doesn't stop. And I just wonder, I brought this up last night, at what point are we going to, the Americans, going to step back and say, wait a second, is it possible that where it concerns the source, the political source of all this murder and mayhem in the Middle East, which is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that has been going on now since 1948. Is it possible that there really might be a Palestinian side to that discussion? Is it possible? Would it make any sense at all if America, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, black, white, man and woman, if we all listened just once to what the Palestinians are saying, if we took a look at what kind of a life they have been forced to live? Not so that we would say, oh, goddamn Israel, but so that maybe we'd say, wait a second. How much longer do we have to push a policy or support a policy that obviously is not working and is causing problem after problem after problem in the Middle East? And I use the word problem advisedly. It's not a problem. It's murder and mayhem of Jew and Muslim alike, of Americans, Arabs. It doesn't make any difference. Is it possible? Is it just possible that if we approach the problem between Israel and the Palestinians with a little bit less than 100% support for the Israelis, that maybe we might be able to find a solution to all this? Well, I believe it is possible. And I also believe that it'll probably never happen. Because once you do that in the United States of America, once you say, wait a second, I'm not sure Israel's right on this, you come under attack by media in this country, by the religious right, the Christian religious right, by the Israeli lobby in this country, which is one of the strongest lobbying organizations in the history of the United States, and more power to them. There's nothing wrong with being a strong lobby, except when it begins to influence U.S. foreign policy to the detriment of the U.S. Then it becomes an issue. Are we not at that point? Think about it.
The words in my head, they're far to the fly. God is on our side in something next war.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. The book I'm reading, and it's a couple years old, Lance in Manhattan, Illinois, sent it to me to read, is Beyond Chutzpah, on the misuse of anti-Semitism and the abuse of history. Norman Finkelstein. Some of the people who reviewed the book prior to publication and who wrote blurbs on the back. Here's this blurb written by Baruch Kimmerling, who is professor of sociology at Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Baruch Kimmerling, he writes, Beyond Chutzpah is the most comprehensive, systematic, and well-documented work of its kind. It is one of the harshest, rational, and non-emotional texts about the daily practices of the occupation and colonization of the Palestinian territories by Israel, and it is an excellent demonstration of how and why the blind defenders of Israel, by basing their arguments on false facts and figures, actually bring more damage than gain to their cause. Avi Shalim, who is the professor of international relations, Oxford University, writes on the book, Beyond Chutzpah is a brilliantly illuminating study of the lengths to which some American Jews will go to present Israel in a favorable light. On display are all the sterling qualities for which Finkelstein has become famous. Erudition, originality, spark, meticulous attention to detail, intellectual integrity, courage, and formidable forensic skills. And it goes on and on and on. And yeah, there's a blurb on the back here by Noam Chomsky, and I know a lot of American Jews look at Noam Chomsky as if he were half human. But where is the truth? The truth is not what we are getting. It is not. And the truth is, the lack of the truth is cost us so much during the Cold War. Forget the Middle East, in Central America, in Africa, in Southeast Asia. The lies and deceptions, my God. But now, to be drawn into what is essentially, or the attempt to draw us into essentially, what is a continuation of or a new definition of holy war. This is how it is seen. And when you engage somebody on the basis of a holy war, I'm going to kill your God. I'm going to kill your God. There's no stopping the adherence to that faith. No stopping it. You can have all the nuclear weapons in the world, but as long as there remains alive one person who thought you killed their God, your life's in jeopardy. But a billion? A billion human, a billion and a half human beings? And this dumbass in the White House is being pushed into this by this kind of redirection, misdirection? And what about us? What about the American people? Is this what we want? Man. So I, you know, at some point, and again, I'll say it again, I have friends here in Atlanta, Jewish friends here in Atlanta, who with whom I dare not discuss this topic, dare not bring it up, because there is only one point of view. As a matter of fact, more and more, my friends here in Atlanta, the ones that still remain, who happen to be Jewish, are now trying to convince me that there is no such thing as a Palestinian. Thing. There's no such place as Palestine. Never existed. And I don't know how to react. These are friendships that go back 25, 30 years. And I don't know how to react. I don't know how to react. Well, just I remember when I interviewed Oh, what's his name? Oh, they're so long ago.
Goodbye.
Help me out, Kathy. Who, Meyer Kahana. Years ago, during the first Intifada, the first modern Intifada, back in the 80s. And he came here to Atlanta, and not a single temple or synagogue would allow him to come and speak because he was, you know, he was considered to be a madman. The head of the Koch party in Israel, who absolutely believed in killing or moving out, if they wouldn't go, kill them all. Every single non-Jew in the biblical Israel. And I've said before, Kahana's book, They Must Go, which I read prior to interviewing him. And he laid it out pretty clearly. This is before he was assassinated in New York City by an Egyptian, if I remember. And Kahana, before he would even talk to me, he said, his term, what is your scholarship? I said, what do you mean? I don't have a degree in Middle East Studies. He said, no. What I mean is, what have you read? What do you know? Who have you read? What books? Before I come on your program, you tell me, what have you studied? What do you know? And I had to sit down real quick and not only provide him a list, but make up a couple of titles and then run like a madman to read them. One of the books was the book Between Palestinian and Jew. And after he took a look at what I claimed to know or have read about the Middle East, only then did he deign to come on my program. And sat there for an hour and very patiently told me I was crazy in trying to find a point of view that acknowledged or recognized the Palestinians. It was an interesting discussion. He's a much smarter man than I, much more well-educated than I, more well-traveled than me, and an absolute Zionist. And it was one hell of a discussion. But I would ask the same question, not to with the intensity of Meyer Kahana, because he was a brilliant man, misguided and a racist, but still a brilliant man. But I would ask you the same thing, truth seeker. What's your scholarship? What have you read? What have you found out on your own about the Middle East? Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Quick email here from Reg over at tvnewslives.org. Reg writes, tvnewslives.org reports regularly news stories published about events involving Israel and the Palestinians. We link to articles from Israeli papers as well as others around the globe to support the validity of the news stories that are either not reported or underreported by the U.S. media. Still, whenever we have a story showing Israel in a negative light, or if we have an editorial or blog questioning the propriety of something that the Israelis are doing, a really ugly number of readers immediately unsubscribe from our daily newsletter. Then, of course, we get the hate mail, calling us self-hating Jews and anti-Semites. But we go on. The truth will out in the end. Reg. Of course, Reg is Jewish. It's an unbelievable topic to try to discuss in American media. And it's not because, as some people would have you believe, that the Jews control the media. That is not the issue. The issue is the fear on the part of writers and commentators to bring this issue up. The only person who brings it up on a regular basis is a self-described anti-Semite, but Pat Buchanan is well known for his ravings against the state of Israel. But every once in a while, Buchanan starts talking, and I'll be listening to him, and I think, damn, you know, just like this bit with Oliver North that's in the news right now. Oliver North is saying that Bush is nuts. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, please don't let this happen. Don't let me be on the same side of an issue as Oliver North. But there I am. Same with Pat Buchanan. I think Pat Buchanan is kind of entertaining in a real diabolical sort of way. But Buchanan is one step away from being a Holocaust denier. He is. I mean, he just is. So it's almost impossible to bring this issue up. But bring it up we will. All right, let's do some calls. Okay. Shelly is on the phone from Chicago. Shelly, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. This is the boss, ladies and gentlemen. Again.
And I'm Jewish.
And you're Jewish. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't know.
With a name like Sheldon.
I sent you a Christmas card.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I wanted to speak for the silent majority of Jewish Americans who agree with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And give you a better sense of what the Jewish lobby is called AIPAC. And just like in America, there's an elite group of wealthy people who control the country,
right.
You know, essentially,
right.
And the media, and not let the truth come out about the Cold War,
right.
The Israel-Palestine issue, and so forth. I think that's very much the case with the perception of American Jews, because with the people I know, maybe you have friends that disagree with you, but with the people I know, they're very much in alignment with what you're talking about. Now, you're talking about a 20% elite, very wealthy group of American Jews who probably constitute most of what AIPAC is and the Jewish lobby, you know. Mm. And certainly they're going overboard here. They're going into the right-wing realm of what they were supposed to fight with the Nazis and so forth.
Shelley, let me, just so people understand what you mean by AIPAC, a lot of people don't. That's the American Israel Political Action Committee. It may
right.
have a different interpretation, but AIPAC is the lobbying group, the umbrella organization that keeps tabs on how American lawmakers are voting vis-a-vis Israel.
Well, that essentially is the same. They have the same power as many of the lobbyists who promote defense spending, the oil
right.
industry, and so forth. So I don't want the listeners to think just because you're talking about sensible foreign policy. I mean, I go back. I had a father who was very independent, comes from an Orthodox part of Poland, who told me Ben-Gurion made the worst mistake by aligning himself with colonial powers.
Mm-hmm.
And so unlike a lot of Americans, know the truth about the situation with Israel and the choices they made. So I can be I can love America and hate the policy, and I can love Israel and hate the policy. So
right,
I feel that
exactly.
I think that many American Jews are on your side, and they're just not as vociferous. I read Carter's book, who's probably the most maligned president in the history of our country, and wrongly so. And he didn't say a single thing that offended me. He talked common sense. He probably is one of the greatest authorities on the Middle East. Because if you read that book, I don't know if you did.
No, I've just begun it, Shelley. I'm still reading Finkelstein's book.
No. Carter's book, you know, he goes back to the point in time when he started to think about running for president when he was governor of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the Middle East to truly understand what was going on and the things he had to do to get the peace process going and so forth and so on. You know, he was a visionary, essentially, about the Middle East, and he's so maligned by the right wing. And I think he's maligned by the right wing of whatever Jewish community, you know, which happens to be the various wealthiest of Jews and so forth. And, you know, again, I don't want to dismay anybody, but not all Jews are rich. And there are quite a few of them that are very working hard at it. The majority of people really want a sensible Middle East possible policy and understand it. So you know, I think that's important for your listeners to know that it is very much a situation like it is in the country. The elites control a lot of what's going on. The Jewish lobby, and I don't want to be called a self-hating Jew because I am not. Believe me, I lost aunts and uncles and whatever in the Holocaust. So, you know, I understand that situation. But I think Israel has made some mistakes in its foreign policy that I think it can remedy with a change. And I think it's going to need a change in this country, too, as well. I think it's like you said, they're sort of walking hand in hand, especially the neocons, who are primarily Jewish. So, you know, I just wanted to set the record straight on the fact, I don't want to use a Nixon term like, you know, the silent majority, but most of the Jews that I hang around with are very much in favor of a balanced policy. Mm-hmm. And it's only the powerful, rich Jews that seem to get hurt all the time. And, you know,
well, I'm glad you're pointing that out, because you and I both understand. We've known each other for several years now,
right.
and we both understand that no matter what the discussion is about Israeli foreign policy, that it's a very short step from criticizing Israeli foreign policy for a lot of people in this country to flat-out, full-blown Jew-hating.
Well, you see, it's the same as true of telling the truth about what we're doing in Iraq. The American media has decided that Israel and criticizing the Pentagon are the third rail.
Mm-hmm.
Of broadcasting. So what we have here, and essentially the Israel foreign policy and the Pentagon and the war makers are all kind of right now united, mm-hmm. in a situation where the media will not criticize them. And,
you know, that's a good point, and I hadn't thought about that. Another subject that is off the table is criticizing the military in this country, because as soon as you do, you are withdrawing support for our fighting forces and providing aid and comfort to the enemy. You know, you're right, Shelley. I hadn't thought about that.
It's the leaders, though. It's not the soldiers. And I'll make one recommendation besides the Carter book. Very long book, James Carroll. Have you heard of him, the author James Carroll?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. He wrote a book, it's actually a dedication to his father, who was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency for 10 years. You know, the very people who are giving intelligence now that is skewed.
Yes.
He was fired in the late 60s for telling the truth. He wrote a book called The House of War, and it is a absolutely wonderful treatise on the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommend it to your listeners, and it actually is very interesting. There are a lot of strange things about the Pentagon. Did you know the Pentagon broke ground on September 11th? 1941, 60 years before to the day.
Wow.
The attack on the Pentagon. And so, you know, he goes through that from an inside person who was brought up by a three-star general who worked for the Pentagon, and it really just completely exposes so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a third rail, too. Nobody criticizes the Pentagon and the complete incompetence and skewed intelligence that was started in 1947 about WMDs in Russia, okay?
Oh,
so this is nothing new. So
I think
the third rail for media is to criticize the military, criticize the Pentagon, and criticize the Israel lobby. And I think it's about time we started to do that. And again, I just wanted to point that out. So they're very much tied together, and it's a media problem. And now we know what the problem is with the media. It's right. There's no independence there, and they're not willing to bite the hand that feeds them. And so, you know, hopefully we can, with what we're doing, try to get a grassroots media support of getting the truth out.
Well, I hope that's the case, and I think people are well aware that and I know that's not why you called, but they're well aware that on this network, censorship about topics is just not practiced. Shelley, it's always good to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Mike.
I appreciate it.
Great.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Quick break. We'll be back in a second. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
got a lot of problems. But I'm going to tell you something about this country. In my mind, there is no doubt that we won't solve these problems.
Yeah, and the moron will be expanding on that theme tomorrow night. We'll carry it live on the program after we join the broadcast, which will be about 6 minutes into it. All right, a couple of quick emails here. This is from Jen. She writes, Mike, I grew up a conservative Jew. I had the whole Hebrew school education, even through Hebrew high school. And I think if it weren't for a bout of severe depression that decimated my ability to think, I might never have broken out of the thought patterns that were drummed into me. Basically, we are never taught, quote, these things are true. We are taught, quote, here's how you respond to crazy people who tell you these things aren't true. It's the same technique the media uses when they do features on those crazy people who think 9/11 was an inside job. Just by discussing them in that context, they create the reality. So it was with our Jewish education and the talking points we learned. Quote, there is no such thing as a Palestinian. Quote, Israel would be completely surrounded if you give away the West Bank. Quote, we offered them a chance to have a state and they always rejected it. This was always the background to... Now, wait a second here. The talking points we learned were almost the background to what they said they were teaching us. To use a crude analogy, it's like when your teacher tells you red plus blue makes purple. It doesn't occur to you to ask, but is this color really red? So to some extent, the disinformation and the propaganda and the framing of the argument, it's the same mechanism as the right-wing news uses. That and the fear of annihilation that has galvanized the Jewish people for centuries. Look what idiots it made of us after 9/11. And these guys have been doing this, passing this information on for centuries. Even now, I feel a little funny comparing my people, my religion, to right-wing propaganda. But it's no longer propaganda. It's reality as they've made it. Those of us who can open our eyes and see the Matrix, well, all we can do is try to wake up everyone else. But it's been so long that they've been doing this, it's an uphill struggle all the way. Jen. Thanks, Jen. And this is from, I'll just give her initials, M.H. She writes, Dear Mike, thank you for talking about how you can't approach this subject with your Jewish friends. I always think of you as such a strong person, the way you go on the air every night and speak the truth the way you do. So when I hear you say that you also avoid approaching this subject with your Jewish friends, I don't feel so alone when it comes to this. My two very best friends in the world are Jewish. We have been through hell and high water together, but I'm scared to death to bring up the Israeli-Palestinian conflict with them. I know I stand the chance of hurting or possibly even destroying our friendship, and I can't stand it because I love them so much. Imagine that, me, an anti-Semite? And the sad thing is that with all that I've been through with them, I cannot say for sure that they would not react that way. Thanks, M.H. It's so touchy. It really is. It really is. And, you know, there's a part of me that cuts an awful lot of slack for my friends who happen to be Jewish, especially in my age group, because of what they have been told, the facts that they have been told about what their aunts and uncles and grandparents went through. You know, I'm thinking of one particular friend I have whose mother and father had to escape the Holocaust by going across. They went through Austria into Italy, where my friend was born, as a matter of fact, and were forced to stay there for 3 years, 3 or 4 years, because they couldn't move. They couldn't go anywhere. They certainly couldn't go back to. That part of Europe that where they came from, and this was a family that had been dodging pogroms for God knows how long, first in Russia, and then in Germany, and then in Austria, and when they got to Italy, they had to stay there, and even then, their existence was very iffy, until finally, after 3 or 4 years, they got the necessary papers to come to the United States. So, it's very difficult to with people who have lived that way or whose families have lived that way to say, wait a second, don't you realize that the Palestinians are being treated like, you know, and you get into that discussion and the look on their faces, like MHRO, is just kind of blank. Or like Genro, the look is just kind of blank. Like, what are you talking about? It's very tough. Coming back, we're going to have some sound for you from Foxy the Snowman. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, I want you to hear now from the White House press briefing today. Some of the comments by Tony Snow, they were particularly outrageous today. I don't know if Tony Snow is starting to lose it. Not starting to, but losing it to a greater degree than he has been. I'm not sure. But I want you to listen to this, especially given the fact that tomorrow night the decider is going to make his decision and pass it on to us, his subjects. Now, keep in mind that the decider's approval rating is below 30%. His party is pimp-slapped at the last election. And Chucklenuts himself is so deluded that he still thinks he has a mandate to do whatever he wants. He's out of what he refers to as political capital, and he's still on a spending spree. But that doesn't matter. Problem is, he's spending the lives of our men and women in the military. So at today's briefing, reporter says, Tony, did the president consult with the Congress before the military operation in Somalia?
Number one, let me put it this way. We know that there was a military, we can confirm that there was a military operation overnight on Sunday in Somalia. We refer you to the Department of Defense for all other details. I don't believe there was a consultation on that.
You don't, the administration?
I'm aware of none.
Yeah, why brief Congress? Just go ahead and drop bombs wherever you like. Why not? You know, God's on your side, right? And besides, it's a war on terror, and there are no boundaries, there are no borders, and besides, there was a huge Al-Qaeda cell there, and besides, you know, we have these two battle groups now in the Indian Ocean, and we have to put them to use. One more question here on the Somali adventure, because the Silent Snowman's answer here is so indicative of the attitude of the Bush crime family toward, well, toward everyone else. Listen to this back and forth with a reporter. Now, this is very quick, so listen up.
Is that all you're going to have on Somalia as far as pointing us back to the Pentagon and
yes,
the ongoing operation? You don't have any other details?
No.
How about how the president found out, et cetera?
You know what? Stupid me, I forgot to do the process stuff. We'll try to find out.
Oh, you arrogant twit. How about how the president found out, etc.? Oh, stupid me. I forgot to do the process stuff. Well, we'll try to find out. God, we'll get back to you. Now, this comment from Snowjob is almost as unfeeling, callous, and out of touch with reality as his assessment. Do you remember that 1,500 dead in Iraq was a number? Or was it 2,000? I'm not sure. Reporters, Martha, I'm sure this was, what's her name, from CBS. Excuse me. She asked about the continuing violence in Iraq and civil war that is now in full bloom, especially considering the horrific battle that took place yesterday between the so-called insurgents and our overstretched troops. She says, Tony, the sectarian violence is increasing. Isn't that something the United States should have been prepared for? Or, like the insurgency, you can argue that, who knew? Should they have been prepared for sectarian violence? Because we had a letter from Zarqawi who basically laid out his plan to foment sectarian violence.
I don't know, Martha. Apparently people in Iraq were not quite prepared for it either.
Fact is,
it happened. And whatever backseat generalship one might wish to practice, fact is, we have important business in Iraq with very high stakes, and the focus now is to figure out a way forward that is going to lead to success.
That's all he's going to say. That's all Chuckle Nuts is going to say tomorrow. I mean, slaughter after atrocity, after error, after lie heaped upon each other. It's a mountain. It's a Mount Everest of deception and lies and murder and blood and death and gore and destruction. And this bastard says, well, you know, the fact is we have important business in Iraq with very high stakes. So, you know, we're going to focus on a way to go forward. Martha Raddatz. So Martha Raddatz of CBS points out, should our troops have been prepared for sectarian violence, our leadership, because we had a letter from Zarqawi that basically laid out his plan to foment sectarian violence. Are you kidding? George Bush saw a presidential daily brief that said, quote, Osama determined to strike in the U.S. And he ignored it. Why would he pay any attention or anybody in a command position to a letter from Zarqawi? And as Snowjob says, well, I don't know, Martha, apparently people in Iraq were not quite prepared for it either. This is astonishing. Like the Iraqi people had some choice in this bloodshed? Like they were shocked that sectarian violence would happen after the U.S. came in and removed their government and began killing people? Yeah, I guess it is their fault for not being more foresighted, right? You evil son of a bitch, Tony. At least your two predecessors were just dumb. You are evil. But that's understandable because you come from Fox News, you punk. Oh, well, Martha, listen, the Iraqi people were surprised, too, by all the violence. And besides, you know, this is very high-stakes business, and, you know, we're going forward. I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you a TikTok or a look back or any of this other crap that this punk comes up with. Listen to this back and forth with the reporter April Levine and this half-witted Tony Snow. And it, again, it clearly underscores the Bush crime family's total break with reality, and it'll give a little preview of the tone you can expect in Bush's speech tomorrow night. Oh, he'll stand there trying to look all presidential and leaderish. But the tone, listen, they're still spouting rhetoric about the noble spread of liberty. April Levine says, Tony, how far does the president go into the issue of public opinion in weighing this out and in making this new way forward, because the public doesn't want to go back to the war.
No, you
they don't want. They want to go away. They
no,
voted.
April. You
the
you,
midterm elections. Did they not vote for leaders who basically said they wanted to?
April, let me ask you a simple question. Do opinions change?
Yes, they do.
Do they change on the basis of arguments?
Change on the basis of results.
Exactly. And did they change on the basis of results? That is absolutely right. So that's what...
There have been more deaths. We went in supposedly to stop terrorism around the world. As a result, it stemmed from the 9/11 issue. And everyone is saying now, look, you have more people dying than they did in 9/11. And you have more U.S. soldiers dying in the world
well,
is not as safe.
You know, I'm not sure the world is less safe. I guarantee you the world is less safe if the United States withdraws and leaves a vacuum in Iraq. I guarantee it. And I guarantee everybody in this room is going to be less safe, and everybody in this country is going to be less safe. I think Americans believe in liberty, believe in this nation's destiny as a country that does advance the boundaries of liberty, not simply because it is a good and noble thing, but because it is good for us, and it is good for future generations.
Yeah, the future generations, Tony, who will still be fighting and dying and paying for this war along with their grandchildren? Clearly, truth seeker, Bush's moment on the stage tomorrow night is going to be the same old about advancing freedom, protecting the homeland. We had to wait weeks while the bodies in Iraq piled higher and higher for this speech, and now the bodies are going to pile even higher. Jesus, God. Now listen here while Tony the Snow Job compares Raisin Brain to Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, and Winston Churchill. This is astonishing. Like Bush's illegal invasion of Iraq can be compared to the American Revolution or World War II, right? The reporter asked why Americans should believe this speech and so-called new strategy, how is it going to be any different from all the other speeches and failed strategies? The question is, Tony, what would your guidance be to a public that has seen the president stand under a mission accomplished banner, proclaim an end to major combat operations? How should the public go into viewing this speech tomorrow night? Does the president worry at all about his own personal credibility as the messenger? Tony, he's given a number of speeches, all of which were designed to tell the American people, I have a plan for victory. And it worked out the way he had hoped. And it sounds like you're asking the American people to, again, hear him say much the same thing as before.
If you'd asked any other president in American history during a time of war whether they had a credibility problem, because they had not foreseen changes on the battlefield.
What?
Abraham Lincoln constantly guessed from Manassas straight through until the final months of the war.
Oh, Jesus.
You had George Washington going from defeat to defeat to defeat to defeat to victory, and there was considerable consternation.
Oh, my God.
So there's the notion here that it is incumbent upon a president to have perfect knowledge of what the conditions on the battlefield are going to be. It's important for a president to have the determination to succeed. Winston Churchill, was Winston Churchill responsible for the Blitz? What Winston Churchill did was talk about the conditions for victory, and the president adjusting to constant changes in the battlefield is adjusting and talking about conditions for victory, and that's the most important thing to do.
This is astonishing. This is astonishing. He says if you had asked any other president in American history during a time of war whether they had a credibility problem because they had not foreseen changes on the battlefield, what? You say Iraq is not a civil war? And then you compare it to the American Civil War? What? He says Abraham Lincoln constantly guessed. Okay, but did Abraham Lincoln have access to satellite photos? He says, so there's a notion here that is incumbent upon a president to have perfect knowledge. No, not perfect, just rational. And more importantly, you jackass, legal. This was an illegal invasion based on trumped up lies. I don't think Lincoln and Washington and Churchill would have been down with that, Tony. And he says, was Winston Churchill responsible for the Blitz? Oh, for Christ's sake. Did Great Britain preemptively and illegally strike Germany? Did I miss something? And he says, in the president, adjusting to constant changes on the battlefield is adjusting and talking about conditions for victory. And that's the most important thing to do. Well, could it be that Washington's starving Valley Forge force was better equipped than some of the troops we've sent to Iraq without proper armor or Humvees or food? Ah, these evil, 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 evil bastards. Just pure, full-blown contempt for logic and rational thought and reason and the American public. Tony, we had an election. If it were a parliamentary system of government, your ass would be looking for a job, and so would Mr. Bush. You're going to stand up there and talk to us when less than 30% of the American people still believes a damn thing this thug says? Oh, God.
I dress in cowboy clothing and sometimes as Top Gun. He cuts down trees, pollutes the air, and blows up things for fun. Dressed up in cowboy clothing and sometimes as Top Gun.
Oh, I'm the president and I'm okay. I bomb all night and I drill all day. I cut down trees and taxes too, especially for my pals. I'm really into marriage, but just for guys and gals.
He cuts down trees and taxes too, especially for his pals. He's really into marriage, but just for guys and gals.
Oh, I'm the president and I'm okay. I bomb all night and I drill all day. I cut down...
I'm honored to
shake the hand of a brave Iraqi citizen who had his hand cut off by Saddam Hussein.
Oh, my God. 8 before the hour. You know, Kathy picks the sound when and she picks what she thinks is appropriate. Apparently, Kathy, open your mic. You and Keith Olbermann were on the same page today. Reggie emailed me that he was Tony Snow was Keith Olbermann's worst person in the world tonight. And what you were saying a minute ago during the break about just the outrage of what this guy is saying.
No, Olbermann needs to stop stealing from us now. Damn him. I'm just gonna. No, I couldn't believe it. I was just staring, you know, at the TV with my mouth agape, just if that's the right word. When he kept talking about Churchill and Lincoln and Washington, and I kept thinking, well, you know, Lincoln might have guessed from Manassas to the deep blue sea, but he didn't have access to satellite images, he didn't have access to presidential daily briefs, he didn't have access to international coalitions of intelligence agencies around the world saying, no, hey, you know. No weapons of mass destruction. Nope, not here, not over there. Your dog can't find them. They're not here. But he wants to say, well, you know, can't second guess because, you know, Lincoln didn't know and Washington didn't know and Churchill.
It's insane. It really is. We use the word insane on this program an awful lot. But these people are mad.
But the press corps just sits there and says, yeah, but, you know, Tony, I don't think that Lincoln seceded from the South and then attacked the South and said, you know, we got to get rid of that General Lee guy. You know, he's a bad dude. He's got gunpowder down there, and we can't have that. I mean, that just didn't happen.
But I think, and this is my guess, that the reason Tony Snow says things like that is because they all operate from the position, and maybe they know something we don't, but they all operate from the position that the American public is just nothing but dumbasses who are going to sit there and eat up what they say. And I guess that's because for the first 3 or 4 years of this thug's presidency, that's what the American people did. I guess they figured if we were so sheepish as to allow 5 Supreme Court justices to stop the count of votes and appoint this bastard president, then they could do anything. Well, and if the American public was so stupid that we would allow these thugs to lie us into a war that was started by Saudi Arabia, that's where these attackers came from. I guess they figured we can do it. They can do anything.
Well, we've got one more sound clip to play, but I'm just, from what I've heard and put together from press reports, I mean, this speech tomorrow night, it's going to stink worse than a New York sewer on a high terror day.
On a high terror day. All right, here's the last one. Finally tonight. Tony Snow, did you know that Bush is trying to build a consensus of opinion on Iraq? You didn't know that? Why start now? This reporter wants to know why Bush is changing his state of policy yet again, this time where it concerns relying on the commanders on the ground to advise him on troop levels. I guess he only relies on them when they're saying what he wants to hear, just like Hitler did with his generals, right? But he can't keep firing them all, can he? The reporter says, Tony, what happened to the statements that he had made for years that the people who decided troop levels in Iraq were the generals on the ground? What he'd said previously was that those were the people who made the decisions, and those were the people he was listening to. And now, very clearly, he's talking to a wide variety of people outside the military on the issue. What happened to this rule, Tony? A real hard, fast rule.
It wasn't a hard and fast rule. What he was trying to do was again, talk about his confidence in generals. He still has it, and he still consults with... Let me continue. There also, though, is every day I get questions. What about the polls? What about the polls? What about Congress? Well, guess what?
What?
When you're trying to build consensus, now it's what the president's trying to do here, is lay the foundation for consensus moving forward in Iraq. It is important to consult people and to take into account a wide variety of ideas so that you have taken advantage of every possible insight you can.
Oh, okay. Where was this murderous bastard with that attitude 4 years ago, Tony? Huh? Too late. Too late. Sorry. The jig is up. We know what you're about, Tony. America is going to laugh at you tomorrow night. Your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour, and we are going to go to the phones now for your comments. The number here is 800-989-1480. So do join in if you are so inclined. Let's start with Tom, who has called in from Connecticut. Hey, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Mike.
Tom.
Glad to talk to you.
My pleasure, sir.
All right. I just wanted to talk about something earlier that you had mentioned at the beginning of the program regarding, you know, regarding how we, you know, look at the world as far as, you know, the rest of the world is concerned. That basically, you know, we're not making it. You know, we're not making it as far as the rest of the world is concerned, and. I'm sorry, I forgot my original thought on the subject, but at any rate, I just wanted to put in my two cents, and, you know, basically it's just not happening with what we have now. The neocons, you know, since they've been in power since 2000, we don't know what they put in place as far as what they – something that could be used – in any case, no matter what us Democrats do.
Right.
So, you know what I'm saying? What I'm saying
yes,
is that...
Yeah, no, I do understand, and I hear the frustration, too. I agree with, obviously, with what you're saying. This administration has so corrupted what America wanted ever since its beginning to be about. We've missed the mark so many times in the past, but I think there was always the thought in the back of our collective heads that we can do better. We've got to do better. We've got to continue to strive to do better. We've got to undo the damage, you know, just on and on and on and on. But with the Bush crime family, there's no recognition that any damage was done. It's just this is business as usual.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, this is the way it's
definitely Alice in Wonderland revisited.
Oh, it's incredible. It's unbelievable. And I just hope that we can get these bastards out of office soon. And I don't mean wait 2 years.
No.
I mean we've got to get them out. They are killing us. They're destroying our country. They're, as you point out, they're destroying America's reputation. They are just turning the promise of America into sludge and mud and puke and blood and filth. And they've got to be removed.
This is insane. Anybody from even the earliest colonial leaders would be puking in their if they were alive today, regardless of their relationships with the English, with the United Kingdom. Anybody would be. I mean, except for of course the South. You know, that's a different story. But you know, and I've always felt that there's a strong relationship between the South. And what's going on with the neocons, et cetera, specifically with the, you know, the extreme religious right. Obviously, we all know, you've talked about it, everybody's talked about it, and there is this huge, between the religion and oil in Iraq, there is just, I mean, there's never been a straightforward answer for why we're there, except for what's in the mainstream and that we all know is religion and oil.
Yeah. Well, that's very true. Tom, thanks. Let me move on. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care, pal. I appreciate it. We'll talk again. As far as, though, we talked about several nights ago, a week or two ago, about white male Southern politicians who have controlled so much of the direction of this country. I've got to say this. I just think these white Southern male politicians are too damn stupid to formulate anything that even remotely resembles foreign policy. George Bush is not a white male Southerner any more than I am. And I've been here about as long as he has. The policies that we have adopted are not put together by white male Southern politicians from Mississippi or Alabama or Georgia or North Carolina or what have you. No, it's done on an entirely different level from these idiots that get elected to office down here and reelected and reelected and reelected. They don't make foreign policy. They can't see that far. They're dumbasses, just totally and completely. Kevin in D.C. is calling. Hey, Kevin. Yo, Kevin.
Hello.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine, sir.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you and hear you on the radio again. I just want to point out that a lot of these, I should say wealthy people, okay, and Bush family included.
Yeah.
You know, with all the think tanks they have at their disposal, you would think one of these tanks would be smart enough to point out with history that they're doomed to failure. You know, wealthy people are under the delusion their money will protect them. And It very rare has it ever. Prime example, the French monarchy, the Russian monarchy. You know, this let them eat cake attitude, and look where it got. You know, Marie Antoinette.
Well, the difference, I think, today is that, as compared to the past, in the past, it would be pretty difficult for the ultra-wealthy to hire private armies and private security forces and live in gated communities. I realize they lived in castles and palaces, and the people still got to them. But I understand what you're saying, but I don't think force is going to end this madness. I really don't. Maybe it will. Maybe it will. I don't know anymore.
Well, the reality is, what's going to end it is that this country is slowly becoming more and more like a South American nation where, okay, yeah, you have this extreme wealthy who is either too scared to live there or living in these fortresses. And eventually, these fortresses get destroyed sooner or later. So, you know, like all these people who are against tax hikes and all that, what they fail to realize is that they are destroying maybe not their future, but definitely the future of their kids and grandkids, because the reality is money doesn't protect you. It's the goodwill of the people. The reason why, you know, on the Upper East Side of Manhattan that you know, these people claim to have Russian aristocracy and ancestry is because probably somewhere within their family tree, someone was smart enough to build a goodwill with some of the peasants so they can escape Russia where all things were going on. You know, and that's what it's all about. You know, we're all in this together. And if we don't, you know, realize that, we're all doomed to destroy one another.
Well, I hear you. I hear you. Thanks, thanks, Kevin. Let me move on. I hear what you're saying. You can't sustain. I'm not the one who said this. People a lot smarter than me say this. You can't sustain representative government or a so-called democracy, democratic republic, like we have here on paper, with the kind of disparity in wealth that is occurring. It simply can't be done. Eventually, the have-nots will say, we've had enough. and all hell breaks loose. So I don't know what the wealthy classes are doing in this country to protect themselves from that reality, or if they're even aware of that reality. I think that's what our caller was talking about. But it is a reality. If you want to kill democracy or representative government or whatever it is we have now, just continue with the kind of disparity that has developed in this country between the ultra upper financial level and the rest of us. It's guaranteed to eventually collapse, and in a very, very bloody mess.
Strange is the world insane. If love and peace are so strong, why are the pieces of love that don't belong? Nations dropping bombs, chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering. As the youth are young, so ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I can ask myself, really, what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of the negative. Not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on.
I don't know.
Where's the truth, y'all? Come on.
I don't know.
Where's the love, y'all?
Forgiving people dying, children hurt, pain, and crying. Do you practice what you preach?
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Jane is calling from Seattle. Jane, welcome to the program. Hey, Jane.
Hi. Hi. Mike. Hi. Well, first of all, I'm glad you're back on the radio. I really missed you in Seattle when you weren't there.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back too. It's good to be back on a Seattle radio station too.
Okay. Well, I wanted to phone. I don't usually phone up the radio, but I was so pleased to hear that someone on the radio is actually willing to discuss the Israel-Palestinian issue. Mm-hmm. In Britain, it's completely different compared to here.
Right.
And also listening to your boss as well, because after reading up on it, it seems like there's a lot of people in politics that really have protection of Israel foremost on their minds, or their vision of protecting Israel. Mm-hmm. And AIPAC is one of them, and it's just not discussed here.
No, it isn't. And this is an issue that I have dealt with. This is not new for me. I've been dealing with this issue for the past 20 years, and just astonished that an issue that has so much to do with U.S. foreign policy is not discussed by American citizens. It's like it doesn't exist. All this stuff goes on, and Americans are totally unaware of it.
Yeah, and the money the money is incredible, what this organization can bring up. I mean, they always compare with the corporate lobbyists, which is fair enough, but AIPAC being a lobby group has so much influence over the pro-Israel PACs.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is so different is they also have important, they have people power. They have physical people that can go to the Hill and literally, knock on congressmen and women's doors, as opposed to the business lobbyists, which have the money, they can take them on trips, etc. But it's very difficult to turn away people from your door in the hundreds that actually happen each year.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, it worries me about the influence of money with the Democratic Party. I mean, Steny Hoyer is very closely aligned with AIPAC. His sister was the president in 2005. And, this all means, does that he stand for regime change as much as AIPAC does? So are we going to be looking for the Democrats basically saying, yeah, we need to go into Iran?
I understand what you're saying, and yes, that's probably what the Democratic Party leadership will say. I have watched this new Democratic Party leadership be totally beholden, if that's the right word, to the same points of view that the Israeli lobby, AIPAC, puts out there. If the American public is not going to support, financially support the candidates, and if, say, the Irish Republican Army decides to spend millions on supporting candidates, well, who in the hell are the people going to vote for? They're going to vote for the Irish Republican Army if an issue comes up that concerns the IRA. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with the Israeli lobby. If the only people making individuals or organizations making massive political contributions to people, helping them get elected, mm-hmm. providing them with phone bank workers, providing them with canvassers to go door to door, and on and on and on, well, who is the member of Congress going to be beholden to? I have for years, I tried to explain, not only do I have a lot of Jewish friends, I also have a lot of Arabic friends, believe it or not, here in Atlanta, and some Palestinians. And I used to try to make the case to them, if you're going to sit back on your asses and whine about how unfair it is, you're going to be slapped all around the planet. If you want to influence American legislators, I'm sorry, but this is how it works in this country. Money talks and the rest of it walks. So to the Arab Americans that I have talked to over the years and said, you've got to support candidates. And I'm not talking about supporting somebody whose last name is Abdullah. I'm talking about supporting someone whose name is Steny Hoyer, for example. You put your money where you want the action to be in this country. Well, for whatever reason, in so few instances did that occur. And there are wealthy excuse me, there are wealthy Arabs in this country, Arab speakers, I'm not trying to lump people together any more than I would try to lump wealthy Jews together. Mm-hmm. But there are wealthy people in this country who adhere to the ideas of a independent Palestine or justice for some of these Arabic countries on the world stage, and they don't do anything. So, a lot of this, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to blame victims here, but a lot of this can be traced right back to the fact that Arab Americans have in the past been reluctant to, maybe out of fear, I don't know, to get behind candidates who would speak for their point of view.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm glad you're talking about it, and I hope more is discussed on the radio.
All right, Jane, thanks for checking
in.
I do appreciate it. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Pauline.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
About 26 before the hour. Back to your calls here. Jarrett is calling from South Bend, Indiana. Jarrett, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
Pretty good. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you and Kathy, and above all, welcome back, man.
Yeah, really.
Really, really glad you're back on the air.
Thank you.
So what I wanted to talk about was I wanted to see if you shared one of my views about where America is in relation to what Chuck Lentz in the White House likes to call the war on terror. One of the things that I think that we can do besides dropping bombs on people, which seems to be his first solution to everything, mm-hmm. Would be basically two words, Palestinian statehood. And the reason I say that is because the justification, I mean, Islam's crazies are basically the same as Christianity's crazies when you come right down to it.
Right.
They fixate on one thing, whether it's abortion or Palestine, and then just drill it in as their reason for doing everything. And it seems to be given, this oppression of the Palestinians seems to be given as their reason for everything that they say, for their recruiting, for the actions that they commit, I'm pretty sure it was one of bin Laden's stated reasons. It was America's unilateral support of Palestine for committing the 9/11 attacks. So I feel like if we were to commit to Palestinian statehood and actually move forward with what Olmert claims he's willing to do, which is, you know, complete the pulling out of the Israeli settlements, release some of the at least the nonviolent Palestinian political prisoners, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and finally move towards building them a constitution, building them something that they can really call their own, something that they can really, that they can say, okay, we're a people again, we're a nation again. Hold on 1 second. I'm actually going to have to go, Mike, but I'll take your heads off the air.
Okay. I appreciate you checking in, Jarrett. With all due respect, your heart's in the right place, pal. It really is. But you need to do some independent work, because several of the things that you said indicate that while your heart's in the right place, you don't understand the dynamic that is the Middle East. And without, you know, getting into great detail and taking up a lot of time, what I would suggest that you do is do some reading, a lot of reading on the Middle East. One of the giveaways in what you said was, you know, releasing Palestinians, at least those who haven't been, who haven't committed acts of violence. You've got to understand that the Palestinian people feel that ever since before the establishment of the State of Israel, going back to the 20s and 30s of the last century, acts of violence were committed against them. And that whatever they are doing now, they are an occupied people. And according to most of the rules regarding an occupying force, they have a right and perhaps an obligation to resist. Now, does that mean blowing up innocent children on a bus in Haifa? To me, hell no. To anyone who figures that they have a moral sense, hell no. But you need to understand more fully than you do. Like I say, your heart's in the right place, pal, and God bless you for that. But I think you're lacking an understanding of the history of that part of the world. And that would be, although you didn't ask for advice, you asked for my opinion. My opinion is you need to do some independent study here. Don't listen to the American media. Don't listen to spokespeople for the Arabs or spokespeople for the Israelis. Do it yourself. Read is the Israeli point of view. Read the Palestinian point of view. Do it yourself. This is where Americans are terribly, terribly lacking in an understanding. Now, you're right that bin Laden, for example, said that one of the reasons for promulgating the attack on the United States, for advocating it, was because of our attitude and our handling of the Israeli-Palestinian issue. So you're right on that. I can tell from listening to you that you've gotten most of your information from mainstream media and maybe, you know, what you've heard here and there. And that's good. That's a good thing. That's a good starting point. But if you are really interested in finding out the dynamic between the Israelis and the Palestinians, then you're going to have to do it on your own, because nobody in this country is going, no media outlet in this country, mainstream media outlet, is going to provide you with the information that you need. You're going to continue to be brainwashed, just like all of us have been. So, your heart's in the right place. Do the research, and you'll find your answers. Trust me, you'll find your answers. The answers are there. John is calling from Indio Hills, California. Hey, John.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Yeah. I was actually, I was like a Mel Gibson Jew hater until you had that guy on who presented an alternative of what the Jew speak was. And I became completely like he took all the wind out of me and actually converted me. And I'm thinking, like, I must be like Saul or Paul on his way to Damascus. I thought, my God, there actually are Jews who believe that, you know, they could actually be mistaken about some of the things they do.
Well, no, hold on just a second. I think you're confusing something. First of all, if Shelley's phone call tonight was all it took to convert you, then your beliefs were pretty much grounded in prejudice and not.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. All right. And not.
I was raised.
And, all right.
You
know, John, hold on a second. I'll put you on hold. Let me get this said.
And
John, let me get this said, or I'll put you on hold. It's real clear to me that your views were pretty much grounded in prejudice, like a lot of Americans, and not in fact. I don't know what you mean by the term Jew speak. That I find that offensive, and normally I would just disconnect the call when you said that. But you know, I've kept you on. To suggest that people who adhere to the Jewish faith are the same as people who run the government of Israel is a common misconception by Americans. And if you have been a victim of that misconception, then I would give you the advice that I just gave the last caller off the phone. And that is, you've got to do some research. If Shelley's phone call was all it took to convert you, then that's pretty wobbly, pal. You need
absolutely
to...
Wobbly. If, and you know what? If you want to just... You know, I understand that I'm going to be, you know, your lesson to other people. I'll accept that because you're right. I am a weak individual. But what I'm saying is that I remember that when Yitzhak Rabin was killed, it upset me because everybody said, oh, a Jew killed him. I mean, all his security forces ignored the guy who shot him in the back because he was wearing a yarmulke. I was upset because, you know, he was looking for a mullah who would denounce this fatwa or whatever, like, if you're against whatever, we will kill you. And that upset me, like, wait a minute. See, he was looking for somebody who would say, like, you know what, it's wrong to kill people. And it was his own, like the Likud party, as you talk about or whatever, that ended up, you know, that this was an individual. Even his own mother said, my womb screams when she thought of him. And I apologize if I'm out of line here or whatever. I'm actually an individual who I was raised in a very my father wouldn't vote for John F. Kennedy because he was a Catholic. And yeah. So when you say, oh, well, you and the Jew, you have no idea the kind of crazy world I was raised in. And you are absolutely right that am I wobbly? Yes. Am I, you know, like, is this all it takes? Well, sometimes individuals are people who are like, they're always on the fence. And it's like, well, wait a minute. If it really, all of a sudden you realize that, oh my God, somebody who I've been taught, like, well, they don't know what that makes sense. You're like, I have really been misled and I apologize. You know what? And again, I don't know what I'm supposed to say to you. Are you angry with me? Have I let everybody down? Well, I'm sorry. I what can I do?
Well, I don't think you need to take that attitude, John, at all. I understand what you're trying to say. I think I understand what you're trying to say is that you have been victimized and just by American media, by what you've been taught, whether it was anti-Catholicism or anti-Jewish stance or anti-whatever. But I think you make a mistake I really do in saying that Rabin's assassin was a Jew like Rabin. That's like saying that Timothy McVeigh was a Christian like all the 168 people he murdered in Tulsa or in Oklahoma City. I appreciate your attempt to get to the bottom of it, and I hope you continue, John. Just continue. Just continue to open up your head and find out what that whole Middle Eastern thing is about.
I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of fighting.
tiny town. On what used to be solid ground, nobody was ever gonna get sized down. Legend or legion.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your calls. Our senior correspondent, Chris, in Minnesota. Moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. And Ben Birch of White Rose Society, who archives the program at NovaMRadio.com. For actual downloads or podcasts, go there. Catherine Bays, our executive producer. And tomorrow night, Bush's speech will be deconstructed live, except for the first 7 minutes, which is how long it takes us to get on the air. From Adam in Wisconsin, the subject line says, "We live in the United States of amnesia. Hello, Mike. I'm reminded of this great saying from Gore Vidal. Each and every day, its meaning becomes clearer and clearer. Do most Americans know that the president of Iran is a figurehead just like the Prince of Wales? Of course not. Do most Americans know that the majority of Iranians are moderate and do not support their president's hardline views? Of course not. Do most Americans realize that Iran is fundamentalist today precisely because of what we did in the 50s, putting the Shah into power? Of course not. Each major problem in the world can be traced back to something stupid we did, but Americans can barely remember what they did yesterday and care not to do research. We say that it is bad for a country to have nuclear weapons, yet we and our allies are the only ones to use nuclear weapons or are working to use them again. This form of hypocrisy is what feeds the fire of hatred for our country worldwide. I believe that Bush is purposely stressing the military. That way, when a so-called threat comes up, we will have no choice but to use nuclear weapons. It is a neocon's dream. Just look at the crazy stuff they pulled already with 9/11, Afghanistan, and Iraq. What are they capable of when they are forced to make in their niche in the last few years of their power? God or whatever, help us. Maybe Cheney will have Bush assassinated so that he can gain power and win the next two presidential elections. I don't think I'll sleep tonight. Adam in Wisconsin." Now, the fact that I used the words Bush and assassinated in the same sentence on this program will certainly get us noticed by the NSA that monitors the program. "Hi, guys. It was an email, but I don't give a damn. Back to your phone calls. Who we got here? Chris in Rhode Island. Hey, Chris. Welcome to the program."
"Hi. How are you, Mike?"
"Doing fine."
"I don't mean to end on a downer here, but with regard to what you were just saying, how do you talk to people who have been systematically and successfully programmed since the time they were born? Most of the Americans that I run into and work with every day are genuinely well-intentioned, nice people. And they've had a combination of religion and love of country drilled into them simultaneously. And I don't know how to break them from that. I mean, I'm not willing to sacrifice a lot of the relationships in my life because people who, in my opinion, have their heads buried in a moist, warm place, you know?"
"Yeah, neither am I. I deal with the same thing you're talking about every single day."
"But how do you have conversations with folks and they say things that they honestly believe are completely true and they can back it up from places that they've read which have been lying to them? I mean,
right.
I know you're not a religious man, but it's frustrating because I'm not a religious man, but I'm a deist. And what aggravates me most about these people is that they're being manipulated because they're good people."
"Yeah, I understand what you mean by that. Yes, yes."
"Well, I don't know. I don't mean to end on a bummer, but that's
Well, no, this whole program's a bummer. Everything we do every night is a bummer. Come on, let's be real."
"Yeah."
I wish I had a program. I tell Kathy every night, tonight we ought to go on the air and just do uplifting good stuff. And, you know, she looks at me and grabs with a thermometer to see if I've got a temperature, you know."
Yeah, that the T-shirt about if you're not completely angry, you're not paying attention or something.
Right. All right, well.
"Thanks anyway."
All right, thanks for checking in, Chris.
"Have a good night."
All right, you too. that, you know, he brings up an excellent point. I have disciplined myself that I don't do this except on this program. Well, occasionally I've got some real activist friends who love to provoke an argument or a discussion, and while we may agree, those friends of mine and I, we may agree on the broader general issue, whatever that broader general issue is, they will work it down to fine points of disagreement just for the sake of argument. It's kind of a non-blood sport. But beyond that, I can't do it. Just like the caller said. You and a couple of emails I've gotten tonight. You can't tell people what you have found to be the truth while they haven't yet come to that realization. And it may not be a truth for them. So you just kind of, you cut your deals. That's all. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You cut deals with yourself about how far you're going to go with this friend and that friend and the other friend. And, you know, is this relationship worth keeping? Am I obligated to explain to this person who is walking around like, you know, just totally ignorant and spouting his or her ignorance? Is it my duty? Is it my job, one might say, to enlighten or educate? No, it's not. It really isn't. It really isn't. If in the course of your discussions and your relationships, you know, somebody gains something, whether it's you or the other person, gee, that's wonderful. But I guess, you know, I'm not even sure about that. I am like most people in this country. I think I'm a good person, but I am lost. Absolutely, utterly, rudderless, no direction. I used to think I knew which direction. I used to think that having children gave me a sense of direction.
Well, Bush has a brand new way forward for you tomorrow night.
Thanks, yeah.
All will be well.
Right. Everything will
Rest
be
okay. Assured.
Everything will be okay tomorrow night. All right. All right, listen, thanks for participating in the program tonight. I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.